Hey everybody, welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 157. It's Martin Obando. I get to hang out with you guys again in the door and just relaxing. We want to give a quick good luck to Cody and his family as things are moving along. It sounds like there'll be a Mini Cooper in the world maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow. I realized I just said Mini Cooper and didn't even realize I said it until I said it. So I wonder if it's going to have the little the British flag on it, like you see. Never mind. Anyways, hey, Dor, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, but I think, I don't know. If I was him, as soon as that car brand came out, I would have been tempted to change my name because I wouldn't want to be associated with it. But that's just me.
Mini Cooper. That's funny. I'm going to call him that from now on. Whatever he names his son, whatever he names his son, Zelda. Zelt?
Link. What?
Link. I knew.
Jeez. He's not going to name his son Zelda.
Oh, my. Cody, I'm sorry.
Wow, is all I'm going to say.
It was a game. I forgot which one it was. All right. Well, anyways, now that we've completely derailed the show so far, I'm glad to be here with you guys tonight.
I'm glad Monday. You're here too, Martin. Yeah, and I will say, me and Cody do this 11:30 my time, Martin optioned to do this earlier. So this week and next week, 157 and 158, we are going to be doing at an earlier time frame. Then 159, we're probably going to go back to the quote-unquote normal scheduled time.
Yeah. And I'll be here hanging out with you guys while Cody is out and just enjoying the time. And maybe we'll get an update from him coming up next week. We'll bring some good news to you guys.
Very cool. Before we get started, I want to seriously again remind people up front, thank Penguin. I said it right this time. ThinkPenguin.com coupons. I beg people, stop buying Asus laptops and then asking me why am I having such a hard time installing Linux on it. Stop buying HP desktops and then asking me why they're having such a hard time installing Linux on it. It's like buying a Ford car then complaining about trying to put a Chevy engine in it. Now, I'll help anyone. You email me, I'll do everything I can to help you. But you could help yourself. Okay? ThinkPenguin.com. We have coupon codes. You email me, I give you coupon code, you get money off. It's free money. Don't pass up free money. And you are supporting a, dare I say, American business. Now, we all know all of these components are made out of the U.S. Whatever. I try to support people who are local to me. I'll say that. These guys are in Jersey. It's close enough to me for me to call them local. And they offer really good hardware at fair prices. Now, we have to understand, they can't buy 10,000 motherboards at a whack. They're a much smaller company, which means we are getting a deal, just not as much of a deal versus the big box manufacturers. But we are voting with our dollars. We are supporting A, small businesses, and B, free software. There's no better way, in my opinion, than going to thinkpenguin.com because you will get the choice of multiple operating systems, not just Ubuntu. You can call them up and say, I want SlidAS. I want Fedora. I want Chrome OS. You can say anything you want, and I guarantee you they're going to try to put it on there. So you get your computer how you want it delivered to you at a very fair price. And I will say they are right now offering a coupon code on their homepage for the Pocket Wii. So more than likely, you could probably use both of our coupon codes. I'm almost tempted to put money on that to get this Pocket Wii small Intel Nook size computer at a really great price. I cannot encourage you guys enough. Stop buying Sony Vios. Stop buying Dells. Buy something from a smaller manufacturer. Support competition. ThinkPenguin.com.
Yeah, I haven't. It's been a long time since I've been to ThinkPenguin. Not a long time. But I didn't realize it until tonight. We're looking at it. They have printers. They have network cards. They have clearance items. They have headphones. I mean, they have a lot of things, not just computers. So they have really branched out into other stuff. Because, you know, I have a Brother printer over here. Linux kind of prints to it. It doesn't scan to it. Definitely doesn't scan to it. You know, I have to go through my Windows boxes. But ThinkPenguin sells HP Color laser printers 802.11, Wi-Fi, Ethernet, new for Linux. So you go out to your local Best Buy and you get a printer and you bring it home and you go, oh, now my Linux box doesn't print to it. It doesn't scan to it. You go to ThinkPenguin, you know you're going to get something that works. And if I would have known that, I would have bought it through there because I have to RDP to my, you know, my Windows box, use the scanning software from there, scan it as a PDF, and then I can get to it. That's great, but I can't scan natively, and it's just extra steps that I wish I would have known ahead and in the, you know, back then. So I'm pretty, this is pretty cool.
That's the other plus to it. All the hardware you see here, if you buy, you are assured they are going to work with Linux. It's like going to the store 10 years ago looking for a printer that says Windows ME on it and knowing it's going to work with Windows ME because that's what you were suffering with back then. If you go here and buy a piece of hardware, rest assured you're going to have very little to no issues whatsoever installing this. Worst case scenario, you go on a website, you click a file, you click install. I can assure people this is one of the central hub places to go, like he said, to get everything. Networking, notebooks, desktops, printers, flash storage devices, desktop computers, laptops, keyboards and mice. I mean, if you don't even go to the website, you're doing yourself a disservice. ThinkPenguin.com. Go there. Stop listening to the podcast. Oh, yeah. Just go there.
We'll wait.
Yeah. Okay. Also want to remind people, please do not forget, LinuxAcademy.com has went out of their way to support us. Let's try to show them at least a little bit of support back, people. Because of them, I don't have to go out and worry about trying to get GoDaddy or some other vendor sponsor that, to be honest, I don't approve of on this show, and I can actually get someone who at least does Linux. Linux Academy has a 14-day trial for only $1. That's all. I'm not going to say any more. A dollar. It's a dollar. Go check it out. Now, I will say in the fine print below that, it does say 14 days or 14 videos. So if you join and you watch 14 videos in a day, and if it says you have fulfilled your a account, I say email them and ask them to bump it. I know they did it for two guys. They said that they bumped it to where now they can watch 14 more videos. So,
wow, that's cool.
So I say jump on it.
Or just pay the $19 and... or the $25, and you get a month out of it.
The bottom line is, it ain't that much for a really good amount of information. A really good friend I know up in Massachusetts, said he believes he's going to be able to use this information directly to get a better job where he currently works at. Let me tell you something. Linux jobs are only going to be in more demand as time goes on. Get on the gravy train now or later. Later, it's going to cost more money. I say get on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, there is a referral link in the show notes. If you go there, the link is there. Or if you just go to Linux Academy, join, they'll let you put in a referral link. Linux for the Rest of Us, all one word, is the referral key. If you just click the link in the show, it will automatically populate for you.
And that just helps out the Podnuts. Just a little bit of extra change.
Yep. And I'll say it again. If you don't use ours, use somebody else's. Use somebody's. Don't just blindly join. Whatever you do, don't just blindly join. It's never good to just blindly join. You want to give somebody credit. Maybe not us. If you can, us, great. If you can't, somebody else. Just do it. Okay, Martin, the first link, this is the kind of thing I firmly believe every small business to large enterprise could, should know about, and probably could take advantage of. On the Windows side, I know you're well-versed with WSUS.
Oh, yes.
WSUS is basically your own personal, quote-unquote, Windows update. So you can take all of your computers in your small business, in your house, in your enterprise, in whatever, and point them to one WSUS server. So whenever your computer's looking for Windows updates, it goes to that server instead of going out to Microsoft.com. There's a couple benefits to that. You save on overall bandwidth, stuff like that. Same kind of thing, but in my personal opinion, much, much, much more powerful because this is not just Windows updates. This is a Debian repository. So you can have all of your software loaded on one server, and you can manage all of your servers, all of your desktops, all of your Raspberry Pis, all of whatever, on one box. So hypothetically, if I want this version of this software, I never have to worry about modifying this, typing that. I can do a new fresh Debian install, point my apt sources list at this local Debian repository that I made with this Debian repository manager, and voila, it's done. Everything's up to date. All the software that I want is easily accessible, and I'm just moving forward.
Yeah, that's cool. Because you end up with, you know, you get the same benefits as you do with a WSO server. Same on bandwidth. You can choose what packages get installed, so people aren't installing, you know, packages that require large overhead. And I like it. I'll have to mess with this. I'll have to put it here locally. Just because, you know, my kids and I all have laptops that are running Linux, and I'll have to mess with this.
Yeah, and it's really cool because this is where, if you know about apt pinning, APT pinning, then you can literally say, well, I want GIMP out of stable, but give me Firefox out of testing, and give me Steam out of unstable. You can literally parse your software out amongst different sources, or even amongst Git repos or .deb files. The amount of customization you can do is great and grand, and the amount of control you can get is great and grand. I will say it will take at least a little bit of work to get set up, but it's the kind of thing, if you really want to manage your complete network, your complete ecosystem, there's no better way to do it. To do this by hand on each computer is a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you modify other machines? I mean, you just change the pointer in the repo, right? Or pointer on the local machine where they just point to the repository. And you just point to your own local server,
yes,
correct?
Yes, exactly like with WSUS, you can go into a registry on a Windows computer and point where the URL is. You can go into the apt sources list, /etc/apt/sources.list file, and basically point to your local server. Of course, you know networking. You can point it to via IP address or by fully qualified domain name or by a host name. And then,
yeah. Well, I was just curious if there was an enterprise way to push it out to multiple computers so they can change where the pointers are. In the WSUS server, you have something like group policy because that's a Windows-based thing. Right. Just curious, if a network administrator wants to implement this, do they have to go to, say, 100, 150 machines and make manual changes, or is there a way to push it out to make changes to all the machines so they point to the same repository?
I'll say there's two ways I can think about doing it. One, you can basically set up fake DNS aliasing on your network, so the real Debian repos are actually pointing toward your servers. Or if you're already using something like Puppet, Salt, or I want to say it's called Multi-SSH, you can in one swoop change multiple computers' sources.list file, because the high likelihood is you're going to change them all. You don't want to just change some, and there's not going to be a need to have anything special in any certain type of computer. It's just going to all point to the same one. So you can use something like a Puppet or Salt to do that, because there is no direct replacement to group policy in Linux. I will say that. And that's by design. And unfortunately, all of the screenshots on this are from a Mac desktop. Don't know why that is, but hey. Whoever did this.
Well, or they could be using Elementary.
The Elementary has that same ugly bar at the top with the green, yellow, red.
Well, you could make your own. You could make your
That's
own.
That's what we're going to say. Themes. They're running the new Razer QT LXDT desktop with a custom theme that I just haven't seen yet.
There you go. I mean, I have the circles on mine too, but when you hover over them, they change colors. Red, green, and yellow.
Gotcha.
Like the circle, the rings.
I think my Ubuntu did that at one point in time. I don't know. I'm easily confused these days, Martin.
Well, and there's so many themes.
Yeah, it never ends.
It never ends.
GNOME look or KDE look.org. Oh my lord, it's never ending. Okay, really quick. A couple weeks ago, I did say something quote unquote political. I really do try to keep things out of the podcast for a certain reason. That one, even after I said it, I got a sick feeling in my stomach because I shouldn't have said it. This was another thing where I wasn't sure if I was going to say it or not, but it's not political, it's not religious, so I think I'm going to say it, even though I think it's going to still, it possibly could put a bad taste in some people's mouth, okay? British antivirus pioneer, Dr. Alan Solomon, okay? This guy, if you go to his Wikipedia page, goes way back in antivirus, now antiviruses work. He did a lot of work in making antiviruses be as successful as they could have been. I'll say that. He did a lot of really good work. He basically said to him, antivirus is now dead. It's dead and it's useless and it can't do its job. It's not going to do its job. I'm just going to use Linux. And there's a lot of reasons that goes into that. Not only due to the fact that how quickly Linux can be updated and how quick it is to respond, but there's a couple other things that go into his reasons, justifications. It's not a long article, or else I would not read it. I would say that. But if you go to blogs.techworld.com, War on Error is the name of the article. I believe that's the name of the article. Yeah. I encourage people to just go check it out and stop and think to yourself. If the guy who did a lot to create modern-day antivirus said he's going to start using Linux because he believes antivirus is dead, maybe he's onto something. Just maybe.
Yeah, he does say in here, because he says, because these days, this is a quote, we're looking at 100,000 new malware samples per day, or 200,000, depending on what you think. Last week on Geeksters, we talked about, not this article, but we talked about the differences between, are we really seeing an increase in viruses, or are we seeing an increase of malware? And are viruses as prevalent today as they used to be, because you have more spyware and malware and garbage and junk that just comes on your computer? So I wonder if his take is, because I'm curious if his take is viruses are dead, but malware is on the rise, or if this is just a wording issue that the author threw in there and I'm picking it,
he says antivirus is dead, not viruses are dead. I do think he's bunching malware, adware, ransomware, all of that into the term viruses. I do think he's being very, I don't want to say inaccurate, but he's being very stereotypical using the word virus. And I think you're absolutely right. Viruses seem to be on the quote unquote decline, at least from my perception, but other things are on the incline, ransomware, malware, stuff like that. And maybe he's saying because the need of antivirus is probably going down. You're going to need anti-rootkit, anti-malware, anti-ransomware, and maybe antivirus softwares basically can't do that solution.
Right.
I'll just say this. Yes, you can get rootkits, malware, ransomware, viruses, trojans, anything of that negative implication on Linux. Yes, you can. Yes. A meteor could come through my window in the next 2 seconds. Yes, it's possible. Yes, I could hit the lotto tomorrow and win a lot of money. Yes, I could open up my check and a Nigerian guy could have sent me $14 billion. It could happen. The likelihood of it, though, slim. Super slim. Right now, today, at this point in time of today, ultra slim. But is it possible? Yes. I personally believe we at least have time in the Linux world, the next week, the next month, the next 6 months, where the likelihood of a mass infection, anything resembling the Windows world, is very slim to none, not going to happen. We do see pointed targeted attacks on routers and stuff, but on the Linux desktop, it's just not popular, and I don't think it's going to be popular anytime soon.
Yeah.
So,
I agree with you. I agree with you. You brought that point about the targeted attack on the routers. You know, I do see a big shift from viruses to malware and going big scale. Why have to worry about bringing things down to each individual Windows box or each individual Mac box or Linux box when you just redirect network traffic? And now you hit everybody in one big wide stroke. So I think as we go along and as technology moves forward, we're going to see a big change, and there may not be, you know, we may have to not depend on antivirus software on our local machine as much as we are going to be depending on our ISPs and even our network administrators in major companies to keep our traffic flowing the way that it should be flowing and not being redirected to malicious sites.
Yeah, I'll say I think it's much more likely that we are going to have violent infections happen on printers, on DVD players, on television sets, on Roku boxes, on TiVos, on set-top boxes, on other the Internet of Things connected devices still even before the Linux desktop, and only because the wide range of software on the Linux desktop is so different from desktop to desktop to desktop. Where printers, if you exploit one series, you have thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of potential targets. So I think we're going to see more of that happen before the desktop. And servers, of course. Servers are always vulnerable, period, because they're servers. They're powerful. First off, you and me were at NELF, and we're not going to talk a lot about NELF because I know that upsets a lot of people. First off, I'm going to say this. I thought today, I am in shock. I am in utter shock. One, this is the first time I heard Tracy do a talk and how good he did. But secondly, I will say, especially because he's not here, I'm in shock I have not heard Cody Cooper give a presentation at an event, because to be honest, I think his personality is directly geared towards standing in a room of people and talking away. He did do something at the last NELF, but I was in a multi-hour session that I was hosting, so I couldn't get a chance to go see that. I'm never going to do that multi-hour session thing again, so the next time when he does a talk, I'm going to be there available for him, but, you know.
And I've never heard him talk, because that was the year that I did not.
You're right. Okay, right, so I'm going to be harassing him to harass whatever fest he goes to allow him to do a talk.
Well, he's had some timing issues come up, and that's what kept him from Ohio Linux Fest last year and then NELF this year.
Right. Yeah, and I will say Southeast Linux Fest is happening, I think, in less than 2 months.
We're picking up at the Portland Airport?
Yeah, right. It's happening about a month and a half, Southeast Linux Fest. It's happening at the worst possible time of the year next to Christmas or New Year's in my calendar. So there's no possible way I can make it. You just went to Northwest.
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. I was scheduled to go. And the day that I was supposed to drive 6.5 hours north, I drove 6.5 hours south. So,
a job.
While I missed out on going to Northwest Linux Fest, I did get paid.
Paid is good.
I've talked to a lot of people, and they said, "I didn't even see you." And I said, "I wasn't there."
Right.
I told John Mad Dog Hall, "I'll see you there." Didn't see him there.
Well, you know, it happens to the best of us. I will say I'm bumping one of the links up, Martin. And it is a /.link. It is to a /.doc article on linux.slashdoc.org, obviously, called John Mad Dog Hall on the Future of Free Software video. I encourage people, on your own free time, just watch this. It's a quick 7-minute video. All I have to say in leading into this is, if you do not know who John Mad Dog Hall is, John Mad Dog Hall is old. He's quite old. He's very old. He's been around computers, computer business, computer industry, more importantly, forever. He understands a lot of the things that are going on in the back office of businesses and enterprises, and how software is utilized and how hardware is handled, kind of thing. He understands a lot more than I think is even possible for a lot of people to comprehend, including myself. Because every time I talk to him, he says something else that amazes me about his depth of knowledge. So I encourage people to go look at this video. The video is entitled John Mad Dog Hall on the Future of Free Software. I'll say I have no idea what the future is, except I think it's going to become more popular. And that's about all. And I could stretch that out into a 5-minute spiel, but that's about it. I'm sure what he says is much more important than I to anyone who listens. And you're the only people who can judge that by listening to it. But I encourage you, listen to it. Go to Think Penguin. Listen to this. And go to Think Penguin and listen to this. That's all I say.
Yeah, he is just an amazing speaker. So I've not seen this issue one yet, but I've heard him speak a couple times. And I think it's been mentioned here before, he could read a phone book. Yeah. And it would just...
Absolutely. And I think because this video was recorded in a private one-on-one session up at Northwest Linux Fest. And whoever did the recording of this, I really want to just smack you around. Just lightly, gingerly, because I want to thank you for doing this, but you did something horrible, which is you have yourself coming out of the right speaker, and you have him coming out of the left speaker. That's like 1980s foolish mistake thing of trying to sound like, well, I want myself to come to the right. No, just have it mono, okay? Just mono everything. Have you both coming out of both ears, because it's really confused me. Because when my wife's upstairs, I have one ear off, and I have one ear on so I can hear her. And when I'm at work, I have one headphone in and not one headphone in. So I would never hear both sides of the conversation ever. So, yeah, it just made me a little bit crazy, mildly.
Well, we could grab the video, export the audio, mono in.
Well, I could not find out if it was under Creative Commons listing, so I did not touch it. But I will say, and John Mad Dog Hall enjoys a good Hefeweizen, Weinstephaner. That was for you, Spaceman Pete. Weinstephaner.
Weinstephaner. I'm going to go get some of that.
Good stuff. It also comes in dark, which I got to say, the good thing about this dark is it's nothing more than just taking the flavor and making it a little bit more compact, a little bit more pungent. And the big tip on everyone, don't drink it cold. This ain't American beer. Okay? Real world example. Even if you don't drink beer, take cheese out of the fridge. Take a bite of it. Then set it on your counter for half an hour, then take a bite of it. It tastes completely different. Cold, masked flavor, which is why most American beers have to be drank cold, because they taste horrible. Weinstephaner, Hefeweizens, you let get nearly room temperature and enjoy them, and you will enjoy them greatly.
Yep, a lot of Belgian beers are like that.
Quite. Okay. Now, we saw Tracy at NELF, and he was talking about small business kind of stuff. He really got me thinking about, it's hard to get through to that really small niche audience of small business startups. So what I wanted to mention this link here. It is on the Calvin Froedge.
I would say that sounds about right.
It's on this guy's personal website. Okay. That's his name. Calvin Froedge, Froedge. And it's Tackling the Linux Network for Small Businesses, Part 1, Goals and Overview. I believe he's going to come out with at least two or possibly three or more of these articles going over the basics of how to implement Linux on a small business setup, the little hurdles you got to overcome, the reasons for doing it, and the basics of how to do it. It's not a long article, which I like, but this guy does a really good job, in my personal opinion, of talking about a good order of operations, aka what your goals should be, but also reasons, justification on why he's doing for what he's doing.
Yeah, this looks really good. I mean, this is something that, you know, I've been slowly moving to. I moved my DHCP server to a Linux box, and it's handling that, and that helps me with the Pixie boot serving as doing a Pixie boot server as well. But I'm looking at maybe putting a bind server in, not necessarily because I would maybe keep it, but more under the fact of that anything you do with Linux in a small, you can just increase it and make it bigger. And, you know, you can't really do that with your Windows stuff as much. I mean, you get a server in, but you have to pay for it. Linux, you make a bind server for your home. Great. Now you can take that same bind server and you can expand it out to an enterprise, you know, and follow the same rules and do the same exact thing.
Oh, yes. And I will say the bind server, bind 9, BIND, the number 9 server, I will seriously tell people this. We all have too much horsepower on our current computers. Let's be realistic. We all have pretty much too much horsepower on our own personal computers. If you install bind 9 on your laptop or your desktop, and you basically do your DNS caching locally on your own computer, in conjunction with the rest of your network and the rest of the world's bind servers, you will literally have the impression the internet, quote unquote, is going faster than it actually is. I've literally done this for years on all my computers. I install bind 9 on all my servers. I reconfigure everything. So it's always looking at my local, quote unquote, DNS caching. Now that does mean sometimes when I go out on a public facing website, I have to hit F5 to refresh. Like when I change something on Panos.com, I have to hit F5 so it actually refreshes the cache every now and then. I'll say that. Not all the time. I don't know if it happens more or less than with your normal DNS servers, but I do know everything else on the internet goes faster, period, when you have a bind 9 server installed on your local desktop. I'm going to put a link here right in our notes. Bind 9 server.
That's something I've never thought about.
Well, I'll say this. It's the kind of thing, if you remember, Steve Gibson put out a DNS speed test. And it.
Oh, yes. I've used it a couple times.
If you install this on your local computer and you do the speed test, you will see phenomenal differences in your local versus everyone else. But you got to remember, phenomenal differences in that test equate to minuscule differences. Like, a half a second versus a half a second plus a third of a second. You know what I mean? Like little teeny differences. But I like it because it's one of those things I believe in my head. I'm saving, you know, 0.2 second 100 times a day. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely helping me at least with my network speeds. I know all of the internet DNS servers run on Bi9. There's not a single internet server that's being ran on Windows DNS or any other DNS. It's always bind. So I feel comfortable with putting it on my own computer. Okay, now this next thing, I'm not going to lie. There are certain podcasts I listen to and I literally despise as I listen to them. And I will admit publicly, once in a while, this is one of those podcasts and it's Floss Weekly. And it's partially because I'm petty. And I'm petty in the sense of the main host doesn't even run Linux. He runs Mac OS X. So that constantly irks me. But I will say I have it in my feed for a reason. And that reason is sometimes they really have really good guests and sometimes they really ask really good questions, you know. And that's something that honestly you can't pay for. The kind of insight that Randall and his co-host can show and the type of guests they do bring on the show. The example I'm going to use is Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I. Okay, in my personal experience, the Jitsi desktop client is horrible, putrid, disgusting, laggy, slow, monotonous, heavy, bloaty software. I can't stand it. I think it's horrible. I think it's one of the worst Skype all alternatives on the market. Every time I use it, the video and audio is completely out of sync. It looks like I'm watching something where the person's lips are like 2 seconds behind the audio and it drives me nuts. It's because it uses Java and I hate Java. Okay. So because of that, I notice all of the things with the software that I can't stand. But this is a big, huge 180 degree, but meet.jit.si. It's a URL using WebRTC. That's http://meet.jit.si. This is pure, unadulterated gold. This is the future of telephony. Thank you. I personally believe this is the future of telephony as we know it. WebRTC is the future, okay? With WebRTC, you can literally have screencast, screen recording, file sharing, peer-to-peer networking. You can have a whole bunch of different hardcore things going on, and it's all in your browser with zero extra software, with nothing to download, nothing to install, nothing to configure, nothing to get running, no work at all, period. If you're on your Android device in your Chrome browser or any HTML5 compliant desktop browser, Firefox support is lacking because Firefox does something weird with WebRTC that is a known bug, that is a documented bug that they are working on, that they acknowledge it's their fault in Firefox. Chrome, Chromium, Opera, and Chrome on Android, this works unbelievably good. meet.jit.si. You simply go there and you automatically get a unique URL. When you get this unique URL, you can click the little link icon and share the link. And the first person in the room can lock down the room and allow only people with a secret key, quote unquote, password to get in. I tested this with Martin, I separately tested this with Steve Cherbino and Eric Ardini. I'm blown away at the quality of audio that this uses. It's basically exactly like Google Hangouts, where you just click the link and all of a sudden, boom, you have a full screen webcam view of the other person. You have little icons at the bottom of each person in the room, and it just works. And this is literally like alpha. This isn't even beta yet. And the audio quality, because it uses Opus, was unfreaking believably good. Video quality is good. It's not great. Google Hangouts still does better. I personally believe if they added the ability to individually record each person in the room to their own separate file, every podcast on the face of the planet within 2 weeks would be using this as their solution.
Well, you know, I have family all over the United States, And, you know, a lot of times we try to get together, and are we going to use Skype? Are we going to use Google Hangouts? And, you know, there's that moment of, okay, let's get together in about 40 minutes. We finally ever get the chance to see each other because somebody, oh, I forgot my Google, you know, I forgot my Google password. My camera's not working right. All this other kind of stuff. And I'm thinking about this after we had worked on it. And, you know, how easy would it be just to send somebody, okay, here's the link. Go here. That's it. You don't have to worry about logging in. You don't have to worry about signing up for anything. You don't have to do anything. And it just works. And so for simplicity of just, hey, let's just hang out, this is a great, great product to do. And you don't have to install anything as long as you have a web browser and not using Firefox, but they're fixing that. But, you know, we tested it and we were talking about pixelation. And the pixelation that we have right now on this show between us, it's about the same. I mean, it's not so, it's on par in its alpha with the video quality that we get with a multi-billion-dollar company.
Yeah. And here's the other thing about WebRTC. It uses very little server resources. So once me and Martin are in that quote-unquote same room, it's basically a peer-to-peer connection, directly me to him, him to me. Because of that, we can basically see better performance, even though it's not really better performance, but it gives us the illusion of better performance because it doesn't have to go to a server. It just goes directly between me and him. I will say it's almost like BitTorrent sync, quote-unquote, in their security, because when you go there, you get a unique URL. It's like 20 characters long, maybe, probably a little bit shorter. So the likelihood of someone else randomly guessing your room and showing up out of nowhere is possible. It's not really probable. So you really probably don't have to put a password on a room unless you're doing something very private that you absolutely, positively cannot have someone else stumble across that room. And I will say the main reason I know my video doesn't look great is because my Logitech QuickCam 9000 in Google Plus Hangouts, if I come here and if I click on my quality setting and if I turn the quality all the way up, my video looks bad. And it's because it's basically trying to do HD and my camera doesn't technically do HD. So if I push it down one notch in quality, it doesn't look as bad. Well, in Jitsi, it's basically in full quality, quote unquote, full quality, which actually gives it a worse performance. But that's not really their problem. That's my problem. Yeah. And it's just a great service. And it's only an alpha. It's only going to get better as time goes on. Now, I'm on board with Jitsi. I'm fully on board with Jitsi because I wanted to look at possibly using this for all future, quote unquote, live shows that I'm on without a shadow of doubt.
Right. Well, the way that we do podcasting now, we could use Jitsi because the way that we come out with a higher audio quality.
Mm-hmm. Yes, with the higher audio quality, technically I think I could probably, maybe, should be, I think, record all of the other people's audio on my computer and not have to have them locally record because that audio quality is silly. And it's using the Opus codec.
Yeah.
For people who use Mumble or even the new Skype. It's using the Opus codec. The Opus codec is the new free software, open source codec that does audio, spoken word audio, remarkably well. If you try to pipe music through it, you'll notice the music doesn't sound quite perfect. You know what I mean? But it's great for spoken word. I like it a lot. I really cannot wait to see this thing keep getting better. Keep getting better. And if you want to know more about it from the developers, twit.tv/FlossWeekly, I believe it is. Yeah, just go there, check it out. You'll definitely enjoy what you're hearing, no doubt. Okay. This next link is my example of the pain, the absolute pain. And this is like if you get stabbed, this is the very beginning of the point going into you. This is the very beginning of the pain, okay? Ubuntu 14.4, 14.04 just came out. I'm on 12.04. Why am I on 12.04? Well, because 12.04 is long-term support edition. Technically, I have support till I think 2017. I got support for years. Why would I need to upgrade? I'm still getting support, right? Everything works great, right? Everything works good. I'm getting support from Ubuntu, from Canonical. I'm getting all my security patches and all this stuff. I don't need to upgrade. I shouldn't need to upgrade. Why would I need to upgrade? Well, there's a reason. Just because Canonical is supporting Ubuntu long-term support 12.04 doesn't mean developers are, okay? This is the very beginning of the pain that I'm going to feel until I upgrade to 14.04. If you go to Web Update, they have a little article on Push Bullet. Push Bullet is a really super ridiculously handy application that you can install on your Android device and on your browsers in multiple desktop operating systems and multiple browsers, where you can very easily and quickly push files, selected text, or URLs from your Android device to your desktop, from your desktop to another desktop, from your phone to your tablet, all around, very easily, super easily. Great little app just to shoot stuff back and forth instead of opening up an email and pasting it or something else. And you can even create circles of friends. So I could have my Linux circle in Push Bullet, hypothetically, and I could take a cool story and push it to the entire circle. So Martin and Cody and Lord D and Jonathan A. Do would all get a little notification from Push Bullet from me. That's cool. That's like a little almost social media network, a little private social media network. And now Push Bullet Indicator has a piece of software I can put on my Ubuntu desktop to where I can have it right there running all the time, even when my browser's closed. But I can install it because I'm on 12.04. And this software is designed for Ubuntu 14.10 or 13.10 and 14.04, sorry. So there is a reason to upgrade. It's a question of, do you want all of the software you read about and you hear about, all of the new, all of the curved edge, fancy, glossy, shiny, cool things that are coming out? Do you want to install them? Well, the more that answer is yes, the more you should look at upgrading your 12.04 box.
Yeah, I'm still sitting on my 12.04. Probably need to upgrade.
Yeah, I did do a command line upgrade from 12.04 to 14.04 on one of my non-production, quote-unquote, laptops. And it took, you know, every bit of 6 hours, but it worked, and it worked fine. I don't have any issues. Everything just works. I got the new diamond-shaped background that looks goofy, but the operating system itself works perfectly fine. I don't see any issues with it. I'm going to run it for a couple more weeks, see how it works, and I'm going to look at possibly upgrading one of these desktop computers down here instead of doing the full reinstall. And I will say this. I'm a firm believer, even on mobile devices, OTA updates mean, you know, something could go boom. You know what I mean? Because it's an update. You know, do you update your Windows 95 to Windows 98? Do you update your Windows XP to Vista? You probably shouldn't. You should probably do a clean upgrade. You should probably do the same thing in Ubuntu. But I will say, I've had really good success in the past when I upgrade my Ubuntu devices. So I'm going to probably take the gamble again and try to do an in-place upgrade. The more you use PPAs, the more you install standalone devs, the more likely you are going to experience issues. That doesn't mean you're going to experience issues. It just means you're more likely to. But I'm going to take that gamble. I'm going to roll the dice because this is a non-production laptop and see what happens.
Yeah. I spent, it was a couple weeks ago. I went ahead, fresh new install, and went to 14.04 and went to install all my apps, because I have a list of all my apps that I installed and the PPAs and everything. And some of it worked and some of it just ran into issues. And there's just going to come a day where I'm going to have to, you know, well, leave what's not working behind and then just embrace what the new things that are working and things like Push Bullet. And this is the people who put this out, not the designers, but the person who put it out is the same guy who does things like my touchpad indicator and my weather indicator. And of which I use those and I like them. They work really well. And this comes out on all the flavors of Ubuntu.
Yeah, I will say the guy behind this does do a lot. This is the kind of guy I personally think literally looks and says, what do I want on my desktop? And he just goes and does it. This is the kind of guy that I don't think, this is the kind of guy who makes Ubuntu successful. Granted, Canonical does a lot of work and whatever. But it's the independent guy who goes out of his way to create these PPAs that give us that extra little bump of software that we might not have otherwise. Yeah, it's just good stuff, and yeah, I'm going to upgrade soon here. I don't know when, but I will. I can never remember the name of this, Martin. Do you remember like a year and a half ago or so when there was the technology that would let you update a Linux kernel in place?
Oh, I don't.
I'm going to do a quick search. Update Linux kernel without reboot. Let's see if I can find it. No.
I do remember that story, though.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, it got purchased by, it was called K-Splice. There you go. And don't get me wrong, great solution. But we also got to remember, this was Rev 1. This was version 1. And it was such a good idea that Oracle decided to buy it. Oracle has Unbreakable Linux, where they basically take Red Hat, change very little, and call it Unbreakable Linux, and put Ubuntu, put a Oracle database on it and sell it. Okay. And now they sell access to K-Splice. Okay. K-Splice is probably good. It probably works really good on Unbreakable Linux. But the community, being the community, that little community, they said, we can do it better. Okay. So they basically went and created Kernel Care, KernelCare, Kernel Care. And this is a system that basically they offer for free that currently works with CentOS 6.0 Cloud Linux. I'm sorry, CentOS 6X, 6.x, Cloud Linux 6.x, RHEL 6.x, OpenVZ, and a couple other distributions where you can upgrade your Linux kernel without rebooting.
Actually, it looks like it is paid for. Now. You'd have to buy it.
No!
Yeah, you can try it free for 15 days, but there's a bronze level with a $100 deposit. So, I mean, really, you can. But it's $395 per server.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
So, it's, you know, it's not bad, but, you know, if it saves rebooting.
Right. I'll be right back, Martin.
So, I'll hang out with you guys. Hey, chat room, how's it going? Let's see, I was looking at some 5150s in there. Sage is in there. Sage, I haven't talked to you in a long time. Bartos? He's not in there anymore. He's back. Okay, everybody be quiet.
Sorry.
No worries.
Had to be done.
I was talking to Sage in the chat room. Like, hey, how's it going, guys? I'm like, oh, he's back. Everybody be quiet. Ah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really hoping they were going to give this away for free. And when I first looked at it, when it was announced, Kernel Care was going to be free, I thought. $3 per server isn't bad.
Well, if you don't have, if you know, a lot of the major companies, including where I, you know, used to work, we had everything was virtualized. And so, if you have the money to have a virtual server farm and you have the money to do all that, then you may not need this because you can move your hosts or move your guests over to different servers and reboot. But if you don't have that, $3, $3.95 a month to do that. I wish it was a per. If they made it kind of an a la carte plan, because a you know, I don't know if kernels come out every month. So would you be paying for it for something you may not use? As opposed to $3.95 per upgrade or per use?
Yeah. So here's the thing I don't like about their pricing structure. I will say that because I'm looking at now kernelcare.com. Bronze level is $3 a month, but it requires a $100 deposit. Gold level is $1.50 a month, but requires a $2,500 deposit. That kind of, you know, scares me a little bit. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And I really wish, not trying to sound stupid, I really wish they would make this free for quote-unquote desktop use, especially for residential use, but also desktop use, and charge for server support. Because to be quite honest, to not reboot a desktop is a nice, it's a great convenience to have, but to not reboot a server, I don't want to say is needed, but for Linux to really quote-unquote succeed, it cannot just be better than Windows. It has to be a lot better than Windows, and never having to reboot is a big plus on any platform that you're on.
Yes.
So I hope they do it right. Jeez.
Well, maybe they'll do a free one.
I hope so.
But it's a good, I mean, it's a great idea. I mean, you know, it's something they're thinking outside the box and they're thinking, what can we give, you know, what can we sell? What product do we have that people wish they had? And this is one of those products that people wish they had. And really, it's not an unreasonable amount of money. They're not asking for thousands of dollars for this, which other companies very well could. You know, any kind of multi, you know, platform patching enterprise, they cost a lot of money. And so for this, it's not free, but it's not break the bank.
It isn't break the bank. I don't like the $3,000 a server deposit that might, you know, break some people from being able to do it.
Yeah. I wonder if that is, if that's a one-time deposit or it's... If it's, you know...
I get the impression it's a one-time deposit, and I do get the impression, like you said, it's a per-computer basis. So if you need the gold support, my guess is that's a pretty crazy important server.
Well, you get the... Well, yeah. So you put the $2,500 down, and then you only have to pay $1.50 a month per server. So, or it could... I'm thinking the $2,500 deposit is a business-level deposit. And then, so say then you have 10 servers, now you pay $150 times 10. You don't have to put the $2,500 down per server.
I think you're right. Thank you. I think you're right, because it does say partner level and pricing per server per month. Pricing per server per month says $1.50. Partner level is $2,500. So yes, it is a one-time fee for a company to get.
And that's actually to become a partner with them. So that's kind of a, their you get, if you click on their partner now, you get a whole bunch of things like some, yeah, things that come with being a partner with them. I don't know, maybe some, you know, giant enterprise systems would do that.
Yeah.
I think for your small home people, they'll probably just manually do it. Server's going down on Sunday night.
Right.
A reboot.
Well, dare I say, even the normal people, quote unquote, are getting used to hearing that. So my logic, the time to strike the iron is drawing to an end. You don't want to wait till everyone is perfectly content with hearing that. Oh, we have to reboot. You know what I mean? I would say the sooner we could get this out to more people, the better impact it would have. So I just, you know, hope they do it right. And I hope if they don't do it right, someone else picks up the torch and makes their own and does it right.
Yeah.
Dare I say. Okay. This last link I'm literally only mentioning because I need to look into it. And I know if I mention it in a show, the link will be there for now, forever, and always be able to find it. Because I'm going to eventually have to look at this. Okay. Docker. Docker on Linux. Okay. I cannot remember the actual name of the core that it uses behind it, but I know it has something to do with Greg Crow Hartman and the cloud server-based operating system that he created in a quote-unquote garage with another guy. What Docker does, Docker creates isolated... dare I say sandboxes, containers is the word I would use, where you can have versions of software inside of this Docker that are basically independent of the core operating system. Core OS is what it was called. Core OS was that operating system. So you have the core of the operating system, then you have Docker on top of it. And Docker is literally just a layer that you can easily copy to other Docker instances of software. So I could have, hypothetically, I could be running the newest Apache on my desktop for X reason. But then in a Docker, I could have a different version of that same software. And then in another Docker, I could have a third version of that specific software, all running independently from each other, where they don't have library clashes or anything else. Everything is contained. Everything is isolated in that Docker. Now, a huge shortcoming in the Linux world versus the Windows world in the last couple of years, in my humble opinion, is the availability of portable applications, like a portable apps. We've had a USB application for years on the Windows side called Portable Apps, where you can go and get all kinds of applications, put them on their USB key, insert that USB key into nearly any Windows computer, double-click, and the application will run, whether it be GIMP, Firefox, Chrome, LibreOffice, FileZilla, I mean, all kinds of applications. We don't have that on Linux. There's no quote-unquote portable applications that I've ever been able to find on Linux anywhere. And it's because Linux typically only installs the application, not all of the dependencies, where portable applications have the application and everything that's needed to run that application with it. Docker could be a quote-unquote portable application type format, to where you could basically copy your Docker out, take it to work, put it in a Docker. When you're done at work, copy it out, go home, put it in its own Docker, and you have the exact same software, exact same versions, exact same configurations, exact same settings in two areas. But right now, it's geared to be a server-related solution, but I could easily see this being tweaked and changed to be a desktop solution for quote-unquote portable applications. And I would probably use it more like that, but I got to look at this. I seriously have to look hard into it because, like, right now I do all my audio editing in a virtual machine, which is multiple gigs in size, where if I could do it in a Docker, I could probably do the entire thing for probably less than a gig's worth of disk space, but I would always be rest assured that I'm running the quote-unquote correct version of everything without any conflicts. So that's why I really got to check it out. I got to look closer into it. I got to see how I can use it, when I can use it. Because I do think this is only going to become more popular with more features, more stable as time goes on. Because Docker is a quote-unquote thing of the future. Every conference now seems to have at least one talk on Docker.
Well, and there's DockerCon coming up.
No, an entire conference?
Yeah, entire DockerCon, June 9th through 10th in San Francisco.
Wow.
So it's not, this isn't small stuff anymore.
Wow, you are not kidding around, Martin. Yeah, yeah.
They have meetups and everything. Docker Talk tomorrow night, Seattle Technical Forum.
Wow, do me a favor, put some links there in the notes, please.
Yeah, their website is docker.io.
Wow. This is going to be crazy big, people. That's all I got to say. Especially on server infrastructures, just because it's so much easier to control all of the software versions. Jeez. Well, I guess the future's here. It's now.
You sound like,
I know. I'm so cheap like that.
The future
is now.
Is now.
Well,
when I started it, it was the past.
What happened to then? You just missed it. Is it going to come back around again soon? Now. You know, camera how it goes.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Oh.
Cool, fine. And unfortunately, this is in San Francisco, aka nowhere by me. So
it's still a way for me to go.
Oh, well, yeah. And it's already sold out, so it doesn't matter.
Oh.
You can join the wait list, though. That's kind of like flying standby, sucker. Oh.
Well, except you end up in the standby. You know you're going from point A to point B at some point. I could get all the way to San Francisco and be like, okay. Sure looks pretty in there.
$600 for standard registration.
Oh.
Bam. Well, yeah.
Have you seen the prices lately for OSCON?
No, because I'm in the U.S. and I use American dollars.
No, well, no, they have OSCON.
No, that's false dem.
No, OSCON.
Yeah.
OSUN, the O'Reilly Conference.
Oh, O'Reilly. No, I don't read books. Why?
Well, no, I'm just curious. It's expensive. It's like $1,200.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now, if you're a speaker, you get it for free.
Okay. Note to self. Thank you.
But I'm not a speaker.
Well,
and you have to know people who know people.
Oh, I'll say there's one really bad thing I got to say. If you go to DockerCon.com, you scroll down, featured speakers, had some goofball hipster with stupid looking sunglasses and big headphones on. It looks bad. But I'm sure he's smart.
Oh, he's the software engineer for Spotify.
Oh, so he has to look like a hipster. There you go.
Nope, never met any of those people.
Yeah. And they have a lot of sponsors, too, so maybe we could look at them as maybe...
DigitalOcean is a sponsor.
Yeah, DigitalOcean. Good people. Too bad they won't advertise with us because we're not big enough. Oh, wait. Sorry. I wasn't supposed to say that out loud. That's okay. I'm not hurt. I'm a man.
Well, can I bring up something geeky?
Oh, you can bring anything you want to this show, Martin.
I got to find it, though.
Okay, well...
I do know. Well, no, it's okay. I think I can talk and search at the same time. So, there is a... Kickstarter coming up, and it's out of, there it is, it's out of the UK. It's a gentleman who has decided to figure out who are the people behind the mask in Star Wars. And so he interviews, and here's the Kickstarter. It's going to be called Elstree, E-L-S-T-R-E-E, 1976, and he's going to be interviewing people behind the mask. Like, what's their story in Star Wars? Boba Fett, who was played by Jeremy Bullock, stormtroopers, you know, Greedo. Like, what are their stories? Who are these guys, you know, that are behind the masks of, you know, what about the roles in, you know, in the, some of the battle scenes where they flash on and you maybe see a character for 2 or 3 seconds and they say a couple lines. So he's doing a Kickstarter for that. And, I listened to I watched the trailer for it and it looks really cool. It's 255 backers. They need £30,000. Since it's overseas, and they've raised £11,000 already. But I think I'm gonna throw some money at this. I have it, and only because my wife Well, because I'm a Star Wars fan, but also my wife stood in line for me while I was at work one time years ago, and I have a signed Boba Fett by Jeremy.
Oh, Bull. Wow.
So it's in a box. It hasn't been opened yet, but so, you know, this is kind of cool to hear people's stories. And what caught me was Greedo. Like, I want to see who played Greedo.
Well, you can probably just look at IMDb.
Well, I know that, but this is going to talk. This, we're going to have a documentary about them.
Well,
like, is he really mad that Han shot first?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. is he happy at the change that happened in the last 10 years of the movie? I will say I'm definitely a little bit interested and intrigued by this. It's not, I'll put it like this. I don't care about the quote unquote people behind this as much as I care about their stories. You know what I mean? Are they the people that basically turned to the director and took off the mask and said, what's my motivation for this? And then they have actual, is there a backstory to these characters that we don't know about? You know what I mean? That right. kind of thing. I think it really could be cool, but I don't know. I mean, I hope it comes to fruition. I mean, he's already a third of his way there, so that's a good sign. And I'm sure Elstree probably means something. I just don't know it. Might be a British word.
But, you know, for £10, I don't know what the £10 is. You get a digital copy of the thing. So that's not, I don't know.
That's good. And I'm going to mention this, Martin, because I don't care. Leo Laporte offhanded commented on the last tweet about a possible show idea. And as soon as he said it, I said, oh my goodness, this is genius. But I can't do it. I don't have time to do it. Hypothetically, you, me, and Cody would host the show. You, me, and Cody would each find a Kickstarter or some other kind of crowdsourced project that either just started or it's in its prime during that week. We each invite someone from that project onto a show. It's like Shark Tank. We sit there as the host. They individually, you know, they try to sell us on their idea. And then at the end of the show, we say whether or not we would support them. We would Kickstarter them. We would pledge them because there is a never ever ending supply of content to hand pick, to cherry pick from. And I'll say, I didn't hear about this. This is why I think that show could be really successful. I didn't hear about this. And I might not have heard about this unless you mentioned it right here. So I think that kind of show is needed. I think there's someone out there who needs to quote unquote cherry pick all these crowdsourcing things and don't just stick with Kickstarter, because now there's plenty of different places you can go to find interesting projects. And it would be really cool to hear about this, because I would love to hear an interview with this guy. What's his driving force? Why does he think it's necessary? Who is the audience? You know, what's the projected time frame after this pledge is done, if you get your money, that you will have this out? I mean, I would love to hear those kind of questions. I know I would pay to watch this. There's a doubt in my mind. I would pay to watch this. I have to see if I can get the money together so I can kick him a little something. But I know the pound to US dollar ratio is not beneficial for him. I'll say that.
No. So £10. So if you want to get the free movie, £10 is $16.87.
That's fair.
So yeah. Elstree is a film studio. It'd be like, it's a giant film studio. King's Speech, Sherlock Holmes, World War Z, World's End, they were all filmed there. So Elstree 1976 is when the first Star Wars movie came out. So that's why.
Gotcha. Well,
that's why.
I would hope that at least one of the people would say honestly how much that the crew and the production crew and the staff had helped make the original Star Wars movie were literally laughing at them, saying how this was so stupid and this would never be successful and this was the dumbest movie idea ever. I really hope they touch on that, because to me that's just hysterical.
Yeah. So it looks like $4 extra to ship outside the UK and estimated delivery date of December 2015. So there's still a year and a half out.
Well, I mean, not trying to sound dumb.
You know.
Dependent on what their goal is, I have extra leniency for time. They want to make a movie, a real legitimate good documentary. I wouldn't expect it to be quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So $40, it looks like £20 is the, you know, it's about $40. And you get a DVD with the second disc of bonus features.
That's also,
I mean, fair. Yeah. So I don't know. It's a little geeky, but being a Star Wars fan, I saw it and I thought, why not?
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool indeed. Good fight. Good fight, sir. Just been boom.
Cool. You have anything else to bring us tonight, Dor?
And
I was quiet. You
Well, I was hoping you were going to bring more links than one.
I'm sorry. I know. I got called away at the last minute to go fix a network outage, which is still down.
Well, and that's the thing. I hope everyone understands. While it is, my kids are in bed, and right now it's pushing 11 o'clock. It's 3 hours early for Martin. He started doing this show at 6:30, a.k.a. dinner time for most people, supper time for most people. So it's literally in the middle of his day. So I definitely want to thank you for going out of your way, Martin, to do the show.
Oh, well, I like hanging out here. That's good. I hear there's good people.
That's what I keep hearing. I don't know where they're at. Oh, wait.
Maybe we'll find them on
exactly. Easter. At the beginning of another fiscal week.
Another fiscal week.
Exactly.
All right. Well, if you want to send emails to Links for the Rest of Us, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you want to send us a voicemail, 7076-PODNUT. That's right, Cody, 7076-PODNUT. Mm-hmm. don't forget to support our good friend, Captain Jonathan Nadeau at the acf.co. That guy is just chugging away, making stuff, making some good stuff for people who need some accessibility. They need to be able to access the data, and we want to be able to throw them some money. I know I toss him some money. I hope you guys out there toss him some money too, because I know he appreciates it every single time. Anytime you go shopping, podnest.com/Amazon, no extra fee for you. No, there's nothing to extra tack on. There's nothing, just a little bit of extra money back for the Podnest Network, just to kind of help us bring you good shows and to keep going. And you know, we like to throw things out there for you guys.
Good times.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a good time too.
Yep. Yeah, I want to thank everyone for their support to Podnest. Everyone who goes to podnest.com and clicks on the donate button, every time you guys go there, you make it less stressful on everyone involved in Podnuts. If no one ever went to podnest.com/Amazon and no one ever went to podnest.com and clicked donate, we would probably have to have 3 sponsors per show. And thankfully, we don't. So I want to thank everyone out there for their support.
Definitely, definitely. Well, guys, I will possibly see you next week with that, and we'll see. I'm hoping to be back next week. Yeah. Maybe Dora. I'll have to send Dora something. Maybe some bacon. You can invite me back on the show.
You have bacon. You can have more than be on the show, Martin. I'll say that.
Maybe I'll sit next to you. I'll fly all the way out there, and I can sit next to you.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure I have plenty of Vine Stefaner on hand.
Vine Stefaner, and maybe something with a little extra hot.
And I'll have a lime ready for you, or a lemon, ready for you, just in case.
That's right. And an umbrella.
An umbrella, yes.
All right, guys. We'll catch you next Monday. Bye-bye.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.